Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Hedging Screens podcast. I hope everybody is doing well. I hope everybody is getting excited for their respective basketball teams as we gear up towards the playoffs. Now, I just want to get this out of the way. I will not be discussing whether or not Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving regret not signing with the New York Knicks. Folks, when I tell you that my head literally spun around and my brain was rattling inside of it when I saw this headline yesterday. Now, I don't really watch sports talk shows because I'm too busy doing other things. I respect the people that do it as a career. And one thing that I've learned in my old age is to really not take what they say on the show too seriously, because most of the time it is entertainment. Obviously, certain personalities try to inject some logical analysis, but more often than not, that fails to be the case, especially when you have people that are working on covering multiple sports. It's just too difficult to be supremely knowledgeable at multiple sports. It's simply too difficult. But I was sitting watching First Take yesterday, Monday, I should say, and the producers, I don't know who felt that this would be a good segment. They decided collectively in the writing room that Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman should debate about whether or not Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving regret signing with the Brooklyn Nets over the New York Knicks. The Brooklyn Nets, who, mind you, are still first placed in the Eastern Conference, even though the New York Knicks have been playing particularly well of late. On Monday, they had their 9-game winning streak. At least I think it was 9 games. I'm fairly certain it was 9 games. They had their 9-game winning streak snapped by the Phoenix Suns, a team who was on the second half of a back-to-back with, you guessed it, the Brooklyn Nets being the first team that they played. Now, first of all, I fucking lied to you guys by saying I'm not going to talk about it, but now I feel like I have to talk about it because I don't understand how that was even a topic for discussion, because just knowing what's been going on with the Brooklyn Nets this season, like, it's pretty clear that we don't know what a fully healthy Brooklyn Nets team looks like. I mean, we do a little bit, and I mean, I was watching the game on Sunday. I forgot who they played the Suns, obviously. I was watching the Phoenix Suns Brooklyn Nets game on Sunday, and the team is so different. The vibe, the appearance, watching them play when Kevin Durant is healthy is night and day. They are an entirely different team. And I know that when KD plays, their record is 16-9, which is a slightly worse winning percentage than what they have as of right now. I think in games Kevin Durant's played, their winning percentage is like 64%, and overall it's about 67.5. Now, that of course includes games with Kyrie Irving, who was healthy on Sunday, and James Harden, who is still dealing with a hamstring injury. And I'm going to have to talk about why the hamstrings, like, just speculate about why hamstring injuries are so just, they lock players down, dude. They are like the fucking Sidney Moncrief or the Michael Jordan of NBA player injuries, because whenever someone sustains one, they're done. They can't do anything. They're out of commission for God knows how long. But anyway, I was trying to find the Nets record with KD, Harden, and Kyrie all healthy, because the last time I saw it, I believe it was 16-3. And I believe that I talked about that last week. I mentioned it last week, and I still don't know how factual that is. But if we just do the math here, pull out my trusty little calculator, 16 divided by 19 gives you a winning percentage of 84%. Now, that is entirely not sustainable. for an entire season, obviously. But when you're talking about a league that is only playing, what is it, 72 games, 75 games, you're looking at winning, what, like 60 of those 72 games? No, that's still way too many. Let's do 56 divided by 72. So if the Nets win 75% of their games, you're looking at about 55 wins. And with a healthy James Harden, a healthy Kevin Durant, a healthy Kyrie Irving, I think that is way, that is easily achievable. Now, how does this tie in to the New York Knicks, right? So the Knicks, who are, I've said it every time I've talked about the Knicks, I have been nothing but nice towards them, mainly because there is no other emotion for me to feel other than being jolly about their success. Because time and time again, said it that when basketball is good in New York and in Los Angeles, the NBA is in a perfect spot. And dude, every time I see the Knicks play, I'm just beyond impressed with how they look. Julius Randle is playing incredible. He's playing incredible basketball. RJ Barrett is also playing incredible basketball. I don't feel I need to continuously sing their praises, but it's easy to talk about how regretful Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are when there really is no way to accurately talk about what the Knicks would look like if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were, what the fuck? My fucking watch vibrated and now I lost my train of thought. So let's try this again. Because we don't have an accurate way of talking about what the Knicks would have looked like with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, it's just, it makes it so much easier to speculate. So you got to think of it like this. If Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are healthy when on, and on the New York Knicks, I don't think the team looks the same way that it does. I'm not so sure that Julius Randle is on the team. I can't say that for certain, but I just feel that with his salary, I don't know if they would have been able to afford KD and Kyrie. I think they might have, but I'm sure they would have had to move some spots around, right? Or move some players around and really just, you know, retool the team. And the team, the Knicks, are as good as they are right now because they have a legitimate game plan that doesn't involve playing through superstars. If you watch the Nets, or really any team, like we'll take the Lakers also, for example, because we're going to talk about them in a little bit. But the Nets, the reason they look so different when Kevin Durant and Kyrie or any two of those three guys are healthy is because their game plan is better exponentially because of the appearance of their superstars. When you're able to play through multiple MVP candidates, it just makes the game easy. And you take that away, the Nets game plan on paper and in theory is very strong. You know, lots of ball movement, lots of player movement, pick and rolls, high pick and rolls, just lots of motion. It's much easier to execute when you have more talented players. And that's why when you watch the team without any of those guys healthy, the offense just looks stagnant. That's the one thing I've taken away from every game with no KD, no Kyrie, no nothing, is that the offense just struggles to get into a rhythm because the rest of the roster is not built to deal with that type of situation. The Knicks roster right now is playing through Julius Randle, whom I'm not ready to call a superstar because I don't believe he's a superstar, but he's an all-star and undeniably a very, very, very good player. I think he is a star in the NBA. I mean, just look at his numbers. He's averaging about 24, 10, and 6, playing heavy minutes, shooting great percentages from the field, and he is the catalyst of their offense, right? Undeniably, the offense runs through Julius Randle. Now, if he weren't the focal point of that offense, I don't know what it would look like. It would probably be a hot mess. And I'm thinking of this in regards to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving being there. Because if they're there, you're building around them. Maybe you do decide to move on from Julius Randle. And what happens if that's the case? You're leaving the offense in RJ Barrett's hands, who I'm not so sure is ready to lead the offense at this point. And then everything just kind of crumbles from there. Again, if you are able to keep Julius Randle somehow, good on you. I think the team would be just fine. They would probably be in a similar position as the Brooklyn Nets. One thing that the Knicks are significantly better than the Nets at is playing defense. And that's why they've been able to win as many games as they have, because they're suffocating, they play hard, and they just play with a lot of intensity. And if the offense doesn't have it one game, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, they're first in points per game allowed and fourth in defensive efficiency, compared to 20th in offensive efficiency and 26th in points scored. It really is just comparing apples and oranges. And another thing that I don't know, like, if the people in the writer's room for ESPN were thinking about was, could you imagine the media shitstorm that would ensue if the Knicks signed Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and they were not healthy and their medical team, I don't want to say that the Nets are mismanaging their players, because now it's very obvious that these hamstring injuries are tricky. I don't think multiple NBA teams or NBA medical staffs are fucking up their players' rehab, but could you just imagine what would ensue if that were the case with the New York Knicks and they just could not get their guys healthy and they wasted all this money on two broken superstars? Dude, the New York Post would be like a pig in shit just being able to print out these ridiculous headlines that would pretty much just crucify the front office, crucify Tom Thibodeau, and just all around shit all over the New York Knicks. I mean, it's different because, you know, the Brooklyn Nets are irrelevant and it's a Knicks town, and that's fine, but I've seen more than a handful of people kind of question what's going on with the Brooklyn Nets rehab efforts. But overall, I just think that's a really fucking stupid argument. Not like the rehab or anything per se, but just the overall just speculation of the regret that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving potentially have. I mean, time will tell. If they win a championship this year or next year, which is highly likely, mind you, I don't think there's going to be any regrets, because there shouldn't be any regrets. And if they don't, you know, maybe there isn't any regret either, because we know that these two guys came to the Nets because they were in a better position than the New York Knicks. And I'm going to use this to lead into the supposed culture talk between the Knicks and the Nets. Now, in sports, in corporate jobs, in large organizations, people love talking about workplace culture. Do you feel, you know, that you are actively helping this corporation, that your input is valued, and that overall it's just a very pleasant place to work? Like, people want to go there. Like, people want to work at Apple. People want to work at Google. People want to work at these cool spots with all these perks and yada yada. And it's the same with sports. Like, there's a reason that good teams stay good for a long time. Like, there's a reason that the Yankees, outside of this season, have been able to bring in star player after star player and remain competitive for the better part of like three decades. It's because they have something that works, and players feel that they can go there and succeed and be the best they can be at their job. Culture, however, only applies to teams that are rebuilding, at least for the most part. When you're rebuilding, you don't have anything else to offer elite players aside from culture. And that could vary team by team. Do you have a player's coach who's willing to work with you and develop you and make you a better player? Very similar to how the Nets did with Kenny Atkinson. And that was a big selling point, is that the Nets, they had just great culture, great rapport with everybody. It felt like a family. And that is ultimately what led them to be able to sign Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, or at least one of the factors that led to them. But if you're a team that's on the come up, you have to have some semblance of culture. You're not going to be able to succeed without it. And again, saying that the Knicks have better culture than the Nets is kind of a moot point, because the Knicks should have better culture than the Nets because they're not as far along in their rebuild as the Nets. The Nets were the Knicks 2 years ago when they overachieved on the shoulders of D'Angelo Russell and punched themselves into the postseason. Like, the Nets are past that spot. You don't need culture to win a championship. You need culture to build a championship level team. But once you reach that, you just need talent and you need team chemistry and you need your guys to be able to tolerate one another on their quest to win the finals. That's the culture argument right there. I would hope that the Knicks have better culture than the Nets, especially now. But again, the one thing I fear, and I kind of feared this with the Nets also, is that if you progress too quickly, that throws off everybody's plan. Because this team was, what did they pick in last year's draft? Third? And now they're the fourth best team in the conference. That is a massive jump. And knowing how sports works, people are going to look at that timeline and think, oh, this team is ready to contend by next year. And that, I don't know if that's going to be the case. So, again, the Knicks probably have good culture. They certainly have talent. I'm not going to deny that. They have talent. They have decent enough culture, but they should, because that's really the only thing they'd be able to offer free agents. It's like, we got Tom Thibodeau, a Hall of Fame caliber coach, got RJ Barrett, a really good building block in a rebuild, and we have a lot of camaraderie around other guys on the roster. And I think that should be the case. And if it weren't the case, I would be very, very scared. Very scared if I was a Knicks fan. The Nets, do I care if they have culture right now? No, because they had it already. And now they're a contender, first place in the Eastern Conference, and could very well bring home a championship if everybody is healthy. Now, getting back to the health, Kevin Durant was healthy the last time the Nets played on Sunday against the Phoenix Suns. I'm just going to very quickly pull up the box score from that game because I don't remember how many minutes he played. He played 28. Okay. It's pretty good. And in those 28 minutes, what did Kevin Durant do? Kevin Durant did what Kevin Durant does. This man scored 33 points on 57% from the field, grabbed 6 rebounds, and handed out 4 assists with only 1 turnover against the second best team in the Western Conference, a championship level team in the Phoenix Suns. This is after the Nets won over Boston a couple days ago. And then, you know, as we know, the Nets have their struggles against weaker teams, but it appears that Kevin Durant is fully healthy from this hamstring injury. You hear that? That's me knocking on wood so as I don't jinx this, because as we've seen, hamstring injuries are quite troublesome. Kevin Durant missed how many games is this? Starting in, what is this? February 15th, I'm pretty sure. February 15th, all the way up until April 5th. This man missed 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. Let's mosey on over to James Harden, to James Harden's page, who, as we know, is also dealing with a hamstring injury and unfortunately suffered a minor setback after about, 2 weeks? He missed his first game April 7th, had a setback last week or so. Say about 2 weeks. So he could, in theory, be out until the beginning of the playoffs, which are in May 22nd or something, the end of May. Now, we learned yesterday that John Wall, I'm going to pull up this article. We learned that John Wall is probably going to miss the rest of the season with a hamstring injury. So this is courtesy of, I don't know who this is. This is MSM, but I don't know if they posted this from somebody else. Anyway, it says John Wall's first season with the Houston Rockets has likely ended early for a reason all too familiar to Washington Wizards fans: in injury. A right hamstring strain will sideline Wall for Houston's final 11 games, Rockets general manager Raphael Stone announced Monday. Here we have it. Another hamstring injury. So now I'm going to click on over to John Wall's page because he will be missing final 2 weeks of the season or so. I think it's about 2 weeks. 11 games. This was after missing however many games up until this point. He was kind of like on and off in terms of his health. Like, he missed 4 games at the end of March and beginning of April, played, then was inactive, played 4 games, then was inactive again, and played 3 more games, and now it's coming out that he's going to miss the rest of the season. So this, like, leads me to speculate, why the fuck are hamstring injuries just so dangerous? It's so crazy that there have been now 3 guys that have missed significant chunks of the season due to hamstring injuries. Like, is it because it's all muscle and you can't really, like, see anything? And it's so vital to just being an athlete, you know, running, jumping, explosive, like, your explosiveness, like, quite literally being an athlete. Like, I would love to figure out why this is the case, because it fucking sucks, dude. It sucks having to see all these guys just, like, not play, like, let alone all the guys who have been hurt this season, because we know the NBA has an injury problem, but the hamstring, like, is that the result of the shortened season? Because guys are just, you know, their workload is more condensed, and a lot of these guys are just, you know, playing at an incredibly high level. Is it putting that much strain on their body? Like, I don't know, dude, but all I know is if we're the Nets, and I'm not taking any chances, as far as I'm concerned, James Harden is going to be placed in bubble wrap until the start of the playoffs, because it's not worth it at this point. Like, just knowing how fickle hamstring injuries can be and how potentially dangerous they can be as well, with the amount of times they can cause guys to miss. I mean, just look at Kevin Durant. Even if the Nets were being a little more conservative with his rehab, he was still out for 6 weeks. 6 weeks, a month and a half, because of a hamstring injury. And, like, there's really no way for it to heal either, which I guess is why, like, which I guess that's why there's setbacks are so common, because, like, all you can do is rest and ice it. Like, it's not like you have a sprained ankle. You know, you do the whole rice thing, rest, ice, compression, elevation, and, you know, you're off your feet for a couple weeks and you're good. You know, and then you can also just throw an ankle brace on, have a little bit more support. You can't put on a hamstring brace. Those don't fucking exist. You'd be walking around looking like you're on stilts, all rigid and shit. Like, it's just scary to think about, man. What else is scary? This is, I worry about a lot of things as a Nets fan, but I don't have the worry that I think, oh, I totally forgot. I wanted to talk about the Knicks making a deep playoff run. Like, I guess I should have found out a way to shoehorn this a little bit more organically, but the Knicks currently are the 4th seed in the Eastern Conference. If the playoffs started today, they would have a matchup against the Atlanta Hawks, who boast the same record that they do. And then, let me just pull up an NBA playoff bracket, because I keep forgetting how this divides. For some reason, I've only been watching the league for my entire life. So, oh, this would be awesome if it loaded. Got fucking potato internet. Okay, so if the Knicks were to beat the Atlanta Hawks in a playoff series, which I think that would be probably one of the most exciting series to watch, because you got Trae Young, Julius Randle. The Hawks, dude, they've been killing it under Nate McMillan. Like, this dude is a fucking amazing coach. And they too have a pretty lengthy list of injuries. It's pretty incredible. But, you know, Trae Young, he's just chugging along. And I think a fully healthy Hawks team might be able to beat the Knicks. And it really comes down to, can the Knicks defense beat, or not beat, can the Knicks defense contain the Hawks offense? I definitely feel that is a possibility. And to further cement this belief, I'm going to see the results of these teams' previous meetings. So the Knicks are actually 3-0 against the Hawks this season. So already, it's looking like it's going to come up Knicks in that series. Now, the Knicks defense, though, hasn't been that great. So in these three games, they've allowed 108, 112, and 127 points, right? The third game was an overtime win in which the Knicks put up 137. But just by looking at these, it's like, you know, listen, man, that was quite the pause for no reason. My brain just shut off. It is very possible that the Knicks are just kind of shit all over the Hawks. The one thing I am a little apprehensive about, though, is two of these victories, at least I think two of them, came after the firing of Lloyd Pierce, or before the firing of Lloyd Pierce, I mean. One of them was way early in the season. The other was in early February. And the most recent one came at the tail end of the Knicks' winning streak. So, I don't know. I think the Nate McMillan-led Hawks definitely give the Knicks a run for their money. And really, it just comes down to, can the Hawks put up these types of performances for 6, potentially 7 games in a row? That, I'm not too confident in. It's much easier to be confident in a team's defense than a team's offense. So that brings me to my next question. If the Knicks maintain the fourth seed, or it doesn't even matter if they're either the fourth or the fifth seed, if they maintain that spot, which is very likely they do because they are, how many games ahead are they of? They're 2 games ahead of Boston in the finals. I mean, not in the finals, in the playoff race. If they're able to maintain their current seeding, they go on, or they would go on, to potentially play the Brooklyn Nets in the Eastern Conference semifinals. Do they have a chance to beat the Nets? A fully healthy Nets team? No, the fuck they do not. I've said it multiple times before. I am on record as saying there is no team in the NBA, aside from the Los Angeles Lakers, that will beat a fully healthy Brooklyn Nets team in 7 games. I firmly believe that. Maybe I'm more receptive to their challenges because, I don't know if I said this last week, though, I am much more frightened of the Miami Heat or the Milwaukee Bucks as a Nets fan than I am the Philadelphia 76ers, because we saw in their most recent meeting that the Nets can go to war with Joel Embiid. I'm not so sure they can go to war with Giannis or Bam, just because of the type of player that those two guys are. You need a unique type of defender to go up against one of those two guys, and DeAndre Jordan doesn't cut it. Jeff Green would probably draw that option. He'd probably draw that challenge, either him or Alize Johnson, who might stand a chance just based off of his effort, but I don't foresee Kevin Durant guarding either of those guys in the postseason for the entire game, because this dude has to, you know, go out and put some fucking points on the board. I would not be shocked if the Knicks met the Nets and upset them, if nothing more than the Nets just play like shit against teams that are worse than them. But like, we don't know what a fully healthy Nets team would do to the Knicks. Like, they could come out in game one and win by 50, and I would not be shocked, just again because of how good that team potentially is when they're healthy. I mean, and then I just think that regardless, if the Knicks do get lucky and manage to make their way to the conference finals, I don't think that they're beating I just don't think that they're beating the Nets and either the Philadelphia 76ers or the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, that's the one thing about the Eastern Conference. I know we talk about how good the West is, but the West is more collectively good than the East. Like, I think the West, or actually, I don't even know how true that is, but I think the West just has better quality teams from top to bottom than the East does, even though the standings, like, they're kind of similar this year, which is very impressive. But, like, if you look at the best teams in the league right now, like, there's Utah and there's Phoenix, but I don't know if teams are as afraid of them as they are, like, the Nets and the Sixers. Because just, like, when you hear that a team is going up against the Nets, like, when you hear that, oh, your team is going up against Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving, or your team is going up against Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, right? Like, the Jazz haven't had much success in the postseason recently, and the Suns, I feel like, haven't been to the postseason since the 18th century. So, it's just different. It's just different, man. But I don't think any team in the East is beating two of the top three teams, because they're too fucking good. They're too good. And I don't care how lucky some teams get, they are not that lucky. And I mean, I could potentially even say the same for the West. Like, there's no team that would be able to beat the Suns and the Jazz and the Clippers and the Nuggets and a fully healthy Lakers team. Like, you got to beat two of those five. That's not happening, dog. I'm sorry. You might get lucky and beat the Jazz or beat the Suns, but I don't think you're beating the Lakers. At least if they're fully healthy. And now, segueing to the Los Angeles Lakers, who are kind of down bad right now. They are down horrendous. They're actually probably more so down egregious. LeBron James is still out. Even though the Lakers won on Monday night against the Orlando Magic, they are still only 8-11 without LeBron James. Anthony Davis, however, has come back and he's off his minutes restriction. Even so, the Lakers are still just 1-2 in the three games that Anthony Davis has played. And he has not played particularly well, averaging just 13 points and 5 boards and shooting a fucking disgusting 34% from the field overall. It has not been good. Pardon me. Forgot to breathe, so my body's telling me to yawn. It just has not been a good time for the Lakers. They are now down to 5th in the West. I don't know if they'll be able to get back into the top 4 seed, because as of now, they are 4 games behind the Nuggets, 7 games behind the Clippers. Actually, no, about 7. So yeah, the Lakers are 4 games behind the Nuggets, actually 6 games back of the Clippers, 7 games back of the Suns, and 8 games back of the Utah Jazz. So, safe to say, I don't think LeBron's coming back until the playoffs start. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think the Lakers are going to handle him much like how the Nets handled Kevin Durant. They will not bring him back unless they absolutely need to. However, the Lakers might absolutely need to. They are just 2.5 games ahead of the Dallas Mavericks, who I'm pretty sure just beat the Lakers twice in a row, and only 3.5 games ahead of Portland. And why is that important? Because Portland, the 7th seed, is currently a part of the NBA's play-in tournament. Now, last week, I fucked up how the tournament is actually supposed to go down, so I'm going to pull that back up again, at least hopefully. NBA play-in tournament. Okay, there we go. Got it. So I thought that it was like the 7th plays the 10th seed and the 8th seed plays the 9th seed. That is, in fact, not how it happens at all. And I still think this idea is dumb. If they wanted to do it to make this season more exciting, I get it. I just don't think it's very practical. So the 9th and the 10th seed play for the 8th seed, and the 7th and the 8th seed play for the 7th seed, which is just so, it's just so fucking dumb. I don't understand. If you're the 8th seed, and you're one of the 8 best teams in the conference, you should be in the postseason. At any rate, the Lakers are, at this rate, getting closer to playing in the play-in tournament. That's scary. That's scary because if things go poorly and they play, who would they play? Well, if they're the seventh seed, they'd play the Grizzlies. And I don't know how that's going to happen without LeBron James. Keep in mind that all of this is with LeBron James out because I think, well, I mean, if they really have to play in the play-in tournament, I think Frank Vogel is throwing LeBron back out there. I don't see why you wouldn't. I mean, you know, he's arguably the greatest player of all time. He would have to be healthy because I also don't think that LeBron as a competitor is going to be like, no, I'm not going to sit on the sideline and let my team just get kicked out of the playoffs. It's like, at least if we do get kicked out of the playoffs, I want to be the reason why. It's like, he probably feels that way. I want to take my team to the playoffs, or my team isn't going to qualify for the playoffs because of me. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that when LeBron comes back, he's going to look like nothing ever happened, you know, back like he never left, despite missing almost, you know, probably 20, 25 games. It's just, when is that going to happen? It's obviously going to happen if the playoffs or if the play-in rolls around and they, you know, they could match up against the Blazers, the Grizzlies, the Spurs, the Warriors. The Warriors in particular are very scary. They're probably the scariest team on this list because, dude, Steph Curry is just on another level right now, and the roster that he's doing this with, like, it's mind-boggling. No disrespect to Andrew Wiggins or Kelly Oubre, but, you know, there's no James Wiseman. Draymond Green really isn't much of a scorer. I mean, he's a great facilitator, but Steph doesn't have that other guy to take, you know, the pressure off. Like, Andrew Wiggins, to his credit, has played marvelously. And he's been decent enough, but I just think that, you know, I don't know if Steph is having to put up these numbers if Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre are just a little bit better. But even still, like, this Warriors team, they are kind of scary. Like, because when Steph gets hot, dude, when Steph gets hot, he gets fucking hot. It's like turning the fucking oven to 11 and then pouring gas on it. That's how hot he gets. Like, they could give the Warriors trouble. I mean, the Lakers trouble. Like, I'm not so confident that the Lakers qualify for the playoffs if they're forced into the play-in tournament. Granted, you know, that's all contingent on the health of LeBron, but I think the West is just like, the West is just too competitive, right? And it's like, they could play any of these five teams and potentially lose if LeBron isn't healthy. But I think by this point, if Anthony Davis is not back to his regular self within the next couple of days, I'll give him a week. If he's not back to his old self within a week and LeBron is still not back, I think it might be wraps for the Lakers because I think they'll just be too far gone at that point. And, you know, it'd get very, very messy. And that would suck to see. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I want the Lakers to be out. You want the best teams in the playoffs. And the Lakers, when healthy, are one of the best teams. But, like, how far is Dennis Schroeder and, you know, 50% of Anthony Davis going to take you without LeBron? It's like, are they good enough to tread water? Like, even if they won at a 500 clip to end out the season, I still think that they would be in, like, that 5-6 spot. Which is good because then they would get a couple days off and LeBron could really come back full. And then you have a fifth seeded Lakers team who is going up against, you know, the Nuggets in the first round. Like, that is a dangerous spot for all the other teams in the league. Granted, the Lakers won't have home court, but I'm not so sure you need the home court advantage when you have the LeBron James advantage. That's just me, but if I'm a Lakers fan, I'm very apprehensively watching my team for the rest of the season because it's just anything could happen at this point, and that shit would really fucking scare me. Now, speaking of anything being able to happen, the Washington Wizards, now just pardon me as I get a little swig here. the Washington Wizards are really just, you know, turning it up over the last couple of weeks. So they were just on an 8-game winning streak and came within 3 points of stretching it to 9 when they lost 146-143 against the San Antonio Spurs on Monday. And during that stretch, Bradley Beal is doing Bradley Beal things, averaging 32 points. He also, over that time, overtook Steph as the NBA's leading scorer, so shout out to him. And then you have Russell Westbrook averaging a triple-double, more specifically 22 points, 13 boards, and 12 assists. Now, the Washington Wizards sit at 27-34, only a little bit under 500, but they are currently the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference, and I'm fairly certain they climbed a couple spots thanks to their recent run. They're now above the Bulls, above the Raptors, granted only by one game, but if they continue with that stretch, they could easily stretch that lead out a little bit more. However, there is not a considerable gap. There is still a gap between them and the Indiana Pacers at about, 2.5 games? I believe so. Again, not insurmountable, because that'd be kind of hypocritical of me being fearful of the Lakers squandering a 3.5-game lead and not of the Pacers. It's not insurmountable, but I think it'd be very hard for them or the Pacers to, they would actively have to try to go out and lose this lead. And granted, they've been bad like all year, so this is really nothing new. They're not like the Lakers, who have only recently had this fucking ridiculous skid. But as it stands, the Wizards could very well play themselves into the playoffs. And as much as I hate the play-in tournament, I really enjoyed the idea of watching Bradley Beal play in the postseason, mainly because I love Bradley Beal and I hate watching good players get fucked by bad teams. It just does not sit well with me. But do the Wizards have enough to, you know, make a little bit of noise? Listen, when you're dealing with bad teams, anything is possible. Granted, as soon as the Wizards match up against either the Nets or the Sixers, they're getting stomped on. They're absolutely getting dumpstered. I know the Wizards beat the Nets earlier in the year. They're getting dumpstered. I'm sorry. If either team is even remotely healthy, it's a wrap for the Wizards. I'm sure Bradley Beal will average like 40 points for that series. I just don't have any confidence in them pulling up the upset. But to get into the playoffs, I do feel that they have what it takes to beat the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are mid as fuck. They're very inconsistent. Like, I'm just looking at their recent games. They've won 3 straight after losing 3 straight. And then they won 4 out of 5, I think that is. And then right before that, they lost 4 out of 5. It's like, what version of the Pacers are you going to get this time around? Okay? You know, they got Malcolm Brogdon, very good player. Same thing with Domantas Sabonis. They have a very solid inside-outside combination. You know, Sabonis is a star player. Malcolm Brogdon, not so much, but they work very well off of each other. And then, of course, there's Caris LeVert. I love me some Caris LeVert. Miles Turner, very solid player as well. But, you know, when you get to the playoffs, you really want just like a higher caliber star. And as it stands right now, the Wizards would be able to beat the Pacers just off talent alone. Like, Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook by themselves, I think, are going to be, or would potentially be, a little too much for the Indiana Pacers. And then, of course, you got Ryu Hachimura. I mean, Davis Bertans, lights out shooter. The depth is where it gets a little squirrely. I mean, you know, you got Robin Lopez, Raul Neto, Garrison Matthews. I don't even know who the fuck that is. That is like the that is quite the name. Garrison Matthews. That is a very Franklin, Tennessee native ass name. That's for sure. But, you know, depth, it really, like, when you're playing, this is the thing. Like, when bad teams play, all of like the conventional things that go into winning don't matter. You know, when we talk about contending, you know, contenders need talent, they need depth, and they need good coaching. But when bad teams play, they could have all of that and it'll still be a fucking shit show. But the thing is, these teams are bad because they don't have all those things, right? The Wizards, I want to say that they're an exceptionally coached team because, you know, they're winning of late, but they're still 7 games under .500. And Scott Brooks has had one really good season since coming over as the Wizards coach. And that was back in 2016-17 when they finished 49-33. The year after that, they dropped by 6 games. And then the year after that, they dropped by 11 games. And then they dropped by 7. And now they've improved a little bit. And I know that there are extenuating circumstances like injuries, this, that, the third. They're Wizards. I would not say that they don't have good coaching. They do have talent, though. They have Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook. And Russell Westbrook has kicked it up to a new gear since his little beef with Stephen A. Smith. So I think the Wizards have enough talent to make some noise to get into the playoffs, but I don't think they have enough talent. They just don't have it to make anything past the first round. They could very well win a game against any of the top two teams in the East because it's very hard to sweep teams. Like, getting swept, you have to be fucking atrocious to get swept. Like, you mean to tell me that you're not only bad, but you're just unlucky? Dog. Like, didn't the Nets even win a game against the Raptors last season in the bubble? And that was the fucking... I'm going to look that up because I can't remember if they did or not. No, they got fucking dumpstered on. Right, but the Nets got dumpstered on that series. But look at this fucking roster. Dude, you got Caris LeVert. Okay, Caris LeVert, good player. I love me Caris, but bro, when your number two option is Timothy Luwawu Cabarro, it's a wrap. It's a straight up wrap. And then after that, Tyler Johnson, and then Garrett Temple, Chris Chioza. Like, this is the type of roster that gets you swept. Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook do not get you swept. They will win one game based on sheer will. If the two of them have to combine for 130 points, if they both have to break the playoff scoring record to prevent getting swept, I fully think that's possible. Like, that would be fucking excellent television. Let's see, what else is there going on around the league? I really don't know if there is anything else. Like, I'm just trying to think. I watched Jorge Masvidal get absolutely fucking walloped by Kamaru Usman. That was fucking, dude, this guy got hit so hard. He just, like, try to convince me that Kamaru Usman's right hand is not one of the heaviest objects in the universe. He put this man on the fucking floor. Like, bro, there was a picture of the mist coming off Masvidal's face, and someone on Twitter said that he looked like Drake in the Sprite commercial with his fucking, when his robot, like the robot panels are coming up and just like the fucking Sprite is squirting out. And I was like, oh my God, bro, he got shit on so hard. But that Kamaru Usman dude is a bad motherfucker. Like, talking about people that I would actively run away from if ever in, like, if any and ever, like, close to fucking some sort of physical altercation, I'm running as far away from him as possible. Fuck having to fight that guy. With all due respect, fuck having to fight that guy. It's just ridiculous. So, I don't know what's next for Kamaru Usman. I'm not really too knowledgeable about the UFC. Like, I follow it. I know the big names, but it's like, people talk about, who should Kamaru Usman fight next for, what is he, a welterweight? I'm like, bro, I don't fucking know. Who's the fucking best welterweight? Who's the second best welterweight in the UFC? Let's see. Welterweight UFC rankings. UFCrankings.com or UFC.com/rankings. Welterweight. Kamaru Usman. Like, who's he going to fight? Colby Covington? Gilbert Burns? Leon Edwards? I don't know. Who's he going to fight? Colby Covington? Didn't they fight already? I'm pretty sure they fought. Did they not? Does the UFC have like... Oh, yeah. He got fucking... Oh, yeah, that's right. He got fucking... He lost. Because I remember Colby Covington was doing all that fucking, like, Trump shit. And Kamaru Usman was just not about it. And then Colby Covington got fucking KO'd. So who do you, like, if you are Kamaru Usman, who do you fight? Like, you're just fucking beating the shit out of everybody in your weight class. Is there even anybody else whom he can fight? Like, what is it? He beat Masvidal. He beat Gilbert Burns. He beat Masvidal again. Covington. He beat Tyron Woodley. He beat this Dos Anjos fella. I don't know who that is. I apologize. Like, he's beaten like everybody in the fucking weight class. Like, the only thing I could think of is, does he jump weight and take on like Stylebender? Like, would he be down for that? How much weight would he have to gain? Because Kamaru Usman is... What is his... What is UFC weight class? UFC weight classes. So if he's a welterweight, he's probably about like, what, 190 pounds or something? Like 186, something like that. Dude, wait, hold on. So welterweight is anywhere from 155 to 170. Middleweight, the next weight class, is anywhere from 170 to 185. Kamaru Usman looks way fucking bigger than that. He is... Oh, so he's 6 foot 170. He's at the top of the welterweight division. So has he fought in other weight classes before? I feel like that's... Because if he is just barely qualifying for that... Oh, did he drop down? What? I mean, yeah, the only thing I could think of is he just... Damn. That's crazy. So maybe he jumps up the middleweight and takes on Stylebender? I don't know. I feel like that would be the next possible thing, is just, you know, fight the next baddest motherfucker possible. And I know Stylebender's a pretty bad motherfucker. There are probably some other bad motherfuckers in that weight class too. But yeah, I think I'll call it here, folks. If you are a returning listener, thank you so much for coming back to hang out. If this is your first time listening, welcome. I look forward to seeing you in the near future. Any way to support me and to support the show is linked down in the description. YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. If possible, be sure to leave a rating and a review on iTunes, and go ahead and follow the show if you're on Spotify. And with that, I will catch you guys in the next one.